Ladies and gentlemen, podcasters and podcastees, welcome to the first of two BlizzCon 2019 bonus episodes. I'm Brian Black, otherwise known as Ro, and this is being recorded on Friday, November 1st of 2019, just a matter of hours after the final day one panel on the Mythic stage of BlizzCon. And oh, what a day one it was. With me to go over our thoughts and feelings about the opening ceremonies, day one Mythic stage panels, and any other info that came our way is my co-host from the Hearth Casual podcast, who is also a true fan of multiple Blizzard franchises and soon-to-be dad legend of a baby alpaca, Kevin Ellis. How you doing, Kevin?
You better believe it. In fact, honestly, Brian, I know we're here to talk about all of the games and
yes,
just everything that's happened today, but I really only want to talk about Dottie, the baby alpaca.
Like, that's it is... Dottie gonna be more than just your best friend?
No, listen. Well, no, not in any weird way, if that's
no,
where
not in a weird way.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that, like, what I'm going to do with Dottie, however, is I'm going to re-keybind on all of my characters from now until time immemorial.
Yes.
I'm going to re-keybind her to one because she is my number one. And when I press one, I want to get her out there. And honestly, it's going to cause problems for me because ever since vanilla days, like 15 years ago, I always use my one key as counterspell or kick or any of my interrupts. But I'm going to have to rewire my brain to where I don't use that ability anymore. Just I won't be able to counterspell or silence anyone anymore. It doesn't matter. I've got my number one, Dottie, baby alpaca. My well, Dottie uptime is the metric upon which I will measure my future success in World of Warcraft.
It's funny that you mentioned the number one, because I think that is not the number that was weighing on most people's minds at BlizzCon 2019 today. I would say that this year's BlizzCon was probably more likely brought to you by the numbers 2 and 4.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
But we will get into all of that. There's no real... structure or show notes for this, folks. This is generally just kind of a in the aftermath of it all. Kevin and I are going to go over everything from the opening ceremony, all the stuff on the Mythic stage panels that happened, the stuff that kind of stuck with us, maybe go over some surprises and such, and just try to digest what has been quite an interesting BlizzCon. As I said before I hit record here, very interesting to me in some ways, in that it was exactly the BlizzCon I expected it to be, and in some really weird ways, not the BlizzCon I expected it to be. So let's start off with not even the opening ceremony, and I just kind of want to briefly bring this up. One of the questions that had been kind of tossed around heading into this BlizzCon was... Blizzard had issued a written apology in regards to the whole stuff regarding the Blitzchung situation and the Hong Kong protests and what Blizzard's actions and how they were incorrect. They'd issued a written apology, and a lot of people were wondering if any further steps would be taken to address that. And they were, right minutes before the opening ceremony started, J. Allen Brack came out and just made an open public statement. And I guess it's weird. I wasn't surprised that it happened, but I think I was surprised by just how much time they gave to the issue and where they decided to place it.
You know, honestly, yeah, the time that was allotted was a bit of a surprise. I had hoped that he would get up there and right out the gate just bring it up and level set, because honestly, it just allows you from that point to, I think, celebrate the con a little bit more. Like, if they had gone totally radio silent on it and done nothing, whether in written form or even up there in front of everybody, then yeah, I mean, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not there. I'm not on the show floor. I certainly haven't seen how the protests have been going outside or anything like that. I've actually been kind of social media dark because of all the leaks that have been happening up until this point, which I can gripe about in a second here. But I thought personally that it came off heartfelt to me. I mean, I know there's probably some out there who we'll analyze it from a PR standpoint and that kind of thing. But honestly, to me, I mean, it seemed heartfelt enough for me, at least personally. And, you know, they got it out there.
I thought it was handled as best as it possibly could be, just given the circumstances. I mean, it, and one of the statements that Jab had made near the end was, is that their actions are going to speak louder than any words that he says up there. And he's right. And I think that was a great way to end it.
Yeah. And the actions are this crazy amount of stuff they're about to come out with, for sure.
Yeah. And I guess before we even get into the very first part of that, I want to ask you, just, you know, a short time removed from all of these panels in the opening ceremony, if I were to have you sum up day one in a single sentence, how would you do it?
Oh, gosh. Got me on the spot here. let's see. Oh, man. Okay. I'm not usually good at these types of games. All right. All I want to do is play World of Warcraft Shadowlands. There's your sentence.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest statement from this, and I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, my biggest statement from this is, I didn't realize I was going to want to play an auto chess game today.
There you go. No, that is clearly my runner-up. I mean, it's not a secret that we're Hearthstone fans here, but yeah, no, that was, honestly, of the whole show, that was the surprise.
The biggest and most impactful surprise for me, I'm sure that there were other elements about other games and stuff that were a surprise to people. It was definitely the most hidden thing.
Right.
It was something that flew under everybody's radar. No one was expecting that at all.
People have floated it as an idea, but then anytime someone would, they'd say, oh, well, but, I mean, would Blizzard really get into the auto chess genre at all? Like, I mean, it could make sense in the Hearthstone engine if they did it right. And I mean, I don't know. I still haven't had a chance to play it, although I'll get a chance, sounds like Tuesday.
Yeah, just a few days. I've got to say, I mean, since we're talking about, we might as well cover it.
Sure.
Hearthstone is coming out with a new game mode called Hearthstone Battlegrounds. And for those of you familiar with what auto chess is, or teamfight tactics, or Dota Underlords, stuff like that, it's basically Hearthstone's take on a game similar to that, in which you recruit specific minions of different tiers. You can recruit them, sell them back. Different heroes that you choose are going to affect the minions that you recruit. There's a recruiting round and then a fighting round. It's an 8-player spectacle. You're not just going one-on-one. You're basically playing it in an 8-player kind of thing. And they already have these cards of like what minions are recruitable and what the hero powers do and stuff like that up on the Hearthstone site. And I was looking through that before hitting record here. I have to say, I'm all in on this. I'm really intrigued and fascinated by this. And like I said, I did not realize I was going to be playing. I was going to want to play a game like this. Like I said on Twitter, I'm practically stunned.
Oh, yeah.
That this was the thing that got the most attention from me.
Yeah, in some ways, so for Hearthstone fans out there that have been sticking around with the game for some time, it reminds me a little bit of the puzzles in Boomsday Project, but you're playing a puzzle against 7 other people simultaneously. And the nice thing about it is, I mean, I don't know how much into the weeds and details of it we want to get here, but if you go back and you watch the first panel that Hearthstone did after the opening ceremonies, which was fantastic, by the way, the whole good versus evil thing. And Khadija Chamberlain is a gem. That's all I'm going to say. she's hilarious. They both were hilarious. But anyway, the point is, though, they have actually also kind of taught me how to play. I mean, I feel like I could go into it generally understanding like what's going on. I mean, I get that like you can move your cards that you are offered, and then the whole purchasing and like freezing and all the little tricks you can do with Bob when you're doing the purchase phase. Like even just going through that panel, I get it. And I feel like I could just sit down to it on Tuesday and at least maybe not have it fully like min-maxed and totally understand like how the meta is going to shape and that kind of thing. But I feel right. like I could get in. And that's been a problem for me with the auto chess games thus far, is that like it's a genre that's genuinely interesting to me. And yet every time I try to sit down to learn one, even watch like a video on it and such, it just seems like such a big hurdle for me to jump, just to learn all these characters and their different abilities, even if I know like a lot of them from League of Legends in the case of Teamfight Tactics. Hmm. But yeah, the fact that I can sit down to cards that I know and just look at it and be like, oh yeah, Micro Machine grows attack every turn. And oh, that carries over between turns and that kind of thing. So like, yeah, no, I'm very excited for it. And I'm definitely intrigued to try it out Tuesday. So are you going to be pushing the leaderboards?
I really don't know. I'm going to see just what I think of it. I think because it's speaking in the language that I'm familiar with, because it's Hearthstone cards, because I know how Hearthstone mechanics work for the most part, it'll be easy for me to pick up. And I think that's the main reason why I'm going to find myself playing a game like this, is because I kind of understand the language. Yeah, yeah. Whereas I had the same issue as you with these other similar games. I did not understand the language going into it. Hearthstone's created a mode with a language that I do understand. So I believe I will pick it up. I think now, as much as I'm excited about this mode, I do have one criticism of it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's necessarily a valid criticism. And I'm kind of speaking from maybe there's a little bit of a cynic in me talking here. But it's worth pointing out is that I love this game mode. I think it's a great idea. My question is it just there to play and have fun? And if so, I mean, that's fine. But does the dev team feel that it will maintain a strong level of interest when there is next to nothing in terms of a reward system for it?
Are we certain there's not going to be a reward system for it?
We're not entirely certain there's going to be a reward system for right. it, but they didn't say anything about it. The only thing they've mentioned in terms of rewards or progressions is that you have more accessibility to features depending on how many packs you've bought right. Purchased from the most recent set. But if there's no way to earn gold or earn packs or even earn dust, if there's no reward system for playing the game outside of ranking and bragging rights as far as that goes, then I don't know how much interest this is going to hold amongst the largest part of the player base. At the same time, though, like I said, part of the reason of playing games is to have fun.
Right.
Does everything need to have a reward system like that in Hearthstone? No, not necessarily. I mean, I'm still playing solo adventures long after I've earned all the rewards from them. So I could see myself playing Battlegrounds just because it's fun. I think having a reward system in there will definitely keep people engaged in it. I don't think it has to be a very deep or heavy reward system, but a little something couldn't hurt. But really, that's my only possible critique of it, and I may get proven wrong when I find out that there is something for playing it. Who knows?
I think if I could choose one reward, it would be a fairly hard-to-get card back, much like the Legend card back. Because like the Legend card back, I would be driven to get it. And I would go all out with the mode and really like super sink my teeth into it in a way that I don't know if I would without like a more exclusive carrot to chase.
A card,
you know,
back based on ranking.
Yeah, like the Legend card back, but for it, you know. I don't know if that would, you know, they'd have to decide like where they place that in terms of like, are you in the top 1% of players or top 10%? I mean, it would come down to a bunch of different factors, but yeah, no, I think there's a chance for that kind of thing, honestly. And what we will see for sure, though, are people who are just fans of the auto chess battlers getting on here, because I mean, this is going to be another option on mobile. And until TFT goes mobile, I mean, this and Dota Underlords are going to be the main ways that you can just have that kind of experience. So, yeah.
Though one thing should be mentioned as far as that goes is that if you want to play this game mode on mobile, you will need to be using a device that has at least 2 gigs of RAM. I mention that because there are people who play Hearthstone on mobile with devices that don't have that.
Oh, yeah.
Like certain iPhone 5s and 6s, I don't think they necessarily have that much RAM. But personally, this mode, this 8-player mode, is something that it's not going to be a short game. It's going to take a little bit of time, and this is something I see myself playing from the PC anyhow. I do want to say, speaking of the fact that it is 8 players, they had mentioned in the panel when Mike Denae was up that that the engineers and such had to go and rework certain aspects of the game to allow for that 8-player interaction, for that 8-player gameplay. And I'm telling you right now, that work that they've done for Battlegrounds is important, because it lays even just a fraction, if only a fraction, of the possible infrastructure for a future tournament game mode.
That's a good point. And in the meantime, I'm certain we're going to get some just crazy 8-player tavern brawls and who knows what else. So
You could have 8-player tavern brawls possibly in the future. Look at us. Of course, we're from a Hearthstone podcast. Yeah. And the thing we talk about first is a Hearthstone feature.
I was gonna say, but so honestly, far it feels like an episode of Hearth Casual, but yeah, that's cool.
Right, but honestly, that was, for me, the biggest surprise of this BlizzCon. Same. And a big surprise for probably a lot of people, because the biggest pieces of news, obviously, is stuff that over the last couple of weeks, if you were looking in the right places, and it wasn't too hard to find, a good amount of the information, at least a lot of the overall information as far as the names of stuff, leaks that were coming out, were holding fairly true. And why don't we just kind of go through these in the order of the panels that happened after the opening ceremony. So Diablo 4 started out BlizzCon and was the first panel of BlizzCon after the opening ceremony. It really was definitely a throwback to Diablo 2 in a way. It feels to me, this game feels to me like the true sequel to Diablo 2, if that makes any sense, in terms of a spiritual successor in tone. And if you listened more to the panels as far as like what they're doing in terms of systems, the classes that they're having involved and such like that, it's odd because by no means am I saying that Diablo 3 was a flawed game or a bad game. I actually enjoyed the heck out of Diablo 3. But at the same time, it almost feels like 3 and 4 are two different takes on the follow-up to Diablo 2. This is darker, it's grittier, and I think it's just Blizzard's way of acknowledging that they're were fans of Diablo 2 that did not care for Diablo 3 and missed a lot of things about Diablo 2 and want to embrace what they had in Diablo 2 in a more updated current way. And Blizzard's responded to that, but at the same time, they're taking some of the lessons that they've learned from Diablo 3 and infusing that into the gameplay and elements that people love from Diablo 2 and just trying to give people the best of both worlds. And I really hope it works out.
They're doing all that and they're taking it in a slightly new direction too. I mean, I totally agree. This feels a lot more like 2, but it also feels more like an MMO than Diablo ever has with the open world. They pointed out the fact that unlike the other games, which, and it is true, Diablo 3 in general felt a little claustrophobic. Like even if you were out in an open area, you often felt like you were just following a path or going through some kind of like tight rock areas or that kind of thing. Here, they were saying that there's no edges to the zones. So, I mean, when you get from one place to the next as you transition in a new area, honestly, they didn't show it happened specifically, but I get the sense that it'll be kind of like transitioning between zones in World of Warcraft, in the sense that like you'd cross some threshold and then just start to see, you know, different types of greenery, different types of scenery in general.
Well, think about, I mean, I don't think it would transition exactly like this, but did you play Diablo 3 at all in like its more recent days?
Oh, yeah. On the Switch all the time.
Yeah, so there are certain zones in Diablo 3, cloisters or something like that, where they reborrow assets from previous zones, but they create it in such a way that the zone just kind of blends from one tile set into another, and the transition's pretty freaking smooth.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I could see that kind of thing, for sure. But no, I mean, the other things that make it feel like an MMO are features I'm super interested in. Obviously, the PvP element with the PvP areas. But even just the fact that, like, you can roll up to a town and look for a group, get a few people together. There's some events out there.
Trading?
Trading, yeah. I mean, who knows?
Trading is huge. I mean, trading's a big, big win for them as far as like the encouraging the social aspect there. I mean, there's going to be some possible scam behavior that they're going to have to be careful for, and I'm sure they'll implement, you know, safeguards against that. But the trading aspect, I think, is big.
Yeah, how many Stones of Jordan are you going to buy my Windforce
for? Oh my gosh, Stones of Jordan. Yes. Well, what will be the Stone of Jordan in Diablo 4? It'd be funny if they just, you know, ended up making Stone of Jordan so good that became the current Super
I think they should do it. It should just be just powerful enough to where you'd want 30 of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, rune words,
yes.
Skill trees. I'm down.
The skill tree. I'm loving it. Okay, so I went over to a couple of buddies' apartment to watch this today. I took all day off work, of course. And so we were sitting there, and like, you know, you go through the opening ceremonies, and we heard J. Allen Brack's intro, and then we saw like the cinematic, which was sweet. But for some reason, when it came to the skill tree and showed us that, all three of us in the room were just going, yeah, like skill trees. I don't know.
You weren't the only one, though. The audience there
made
like an audible cheer of applause. And I mean, quick tangent here. I would say that audience reactions for a lot of this stuff for Diablo and Overwatch were relatively muted, and except for a few points, and that skill tree reveal was one of the points where you got one of the loudest pops out of that crowd today.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, no, that's super exciting. And so, yeah, it's taking elements from all these different games and mashing them together. The other thing that really excites me too, that they brought up a little bit in the panel, is the sense that, so one of the problems with action RPGs like this is that sometimes, certainly near the end game, and as you've got all your gear and your set all lined up and everything, there's certain builds that are just so powerful that they just take up the whole screen. And I mean, that's certainly true in Diablo 3. You know, if you got the full Tal Rasha and you just press one button and then fire rains from the sky and everything's blowing up in arcane explosions, that kind of thing, and you're just running full speed, killing everything in sight, like that play doesn't quite work for some people in some ways. And this is intended to mitigate it some. I mean, I think the gameplay we saw, at least, seems to be fairly low level stuff. Like the damage numbers they're hitting for don't seem to be much. But they did say that in general, the power level of the characters are going to be kept down enough to where you're not just going totally nuts all the time. And that, honestly, that makes it interesting. I think that's going to reward skill in ways that 3 doesn't as much for me. 3 to me seems, at this point anyway, more like how fast can I run through a greater rift, really, you know?
Yeah, another thing that I found interesting was just the fact that they're willing to go down this darker path and just explore the story decades ahead in the future. It just looking at that cinematic, seeing what happened there, the introduction of Lilith as being, you know, a primary character in the lore and stuff like this, it feels very Diablo, and yet at the same time, it feels like there's this strange, awkward disconnect, at least in terms of what we know right now from the lore and the story. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a disconnect in a bad way. It's that it just feels like this is an entirely new part of the lore that I never realized I wanted to learn more about.
Yeah, and for me, the juiciest thing is we didn't really get a lot of details about Hell itself, which is other than the promise that we're getting it. And honestly, it's a good thing. Like, I do like surprises in my games, for sure. And if I honestly never know anything about the Hell levels until I get there myself, I'd be kind of a happy guy. But at the same time, that's what's interesting to me, is that if we've brought the daughter of Mephisto into the world, and that seems to be the big bad, at least what's been teeing up so far, is right. she who we fight in hell, or is it maybe Diablo again? Like, I mean, I genuinely don't know, and that's, to me, the thing that's tantalizing for now.
I kind of hope that Diablo ends up being the end boss of an expansion pack.
Same. That'd be cool.
I mean, it'd be weird to not fight Diablo at the end of the Diablo of the prime of the main Diablo game, but hey, why not?
They brought it back every other time. They keep right. stretching further and further to make it fit the story, but it could be done. Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
I've always found it weird in the previous Diablo games when they do expansions that it's like you've beaten Diablo, but this thing is even more of a threat. So, you know, turn the formula kind of on its head. This time, make the end boss of the main game, you know, this supposed big threat. And then the expansion is now you go up against Diablo.
That's actually not a bad idea. I like it.
All right. Well, there's definitely still a lot that we have yet to learn about the game, and the game is very much in early, early development. I don't expect us to get this game until late 2021, if not 2022, Kevin.
I'm getting a 2022 vibe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just because of, it is true, like, and even when you look at the gameplay of it, I believe, it to me, the first little trailer where they showed off gameplay in all those different zones, that looked a lot more crisp to me than some of the demo stuff that's happened since then. I think they've got, they're definitely going the right direction stylistically and everything. I just think it did lack a little bit of that Blizzard polish that we're used to, which is the kind of thing that makes me think it's a ways away from coming out. I mean, I felt the same way about, obviously, Diablo Immortal last year, which, while I'm on the subject, that's something we didn't hear about.
You're right, it isn't. And I actually went to Twitter and I sent texts to people who were on location and there. Like, I sent a text at this saying, can you find out for me if Diablo Immortal is actually even there to be played? And I got confirmation you can play Diablo Immortal at BlizzCon. So
oh, really?
They just,
okay.
Yep. They do have the station set for it. So they did not mention it in the opening ceremony at all, to the best of my knowledge. I don't remember hearing it. And yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
I don't think there's anything wrong with having a Diablo Immortal, but at the same time, this was definitely a year to put your focus on the games that they put their focus on. And they can talk about Diablo Immortal at a later time. I have a feeling that the next time we hear about Diablo Immortal is just going to simply be when the game launches.
Or at least the beta. That. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So do you know from Thist or anybody else whether the demo being shown on the floor is massively different and improved since last year? I mean,
in terms of Immortal?
Yeah, yeah.
I do not know.
That would be an interesting question to me. Is it, because clearly it wouldn't be a carbon copy of what we had a year ago. I would think we'd at least have maybe like item sets or something. I don't know. That's a good, I hadn't heard that it was on the floor yet, so that's news to me.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on to the next big reveal, and I don't mean Overwatch, because I think a bigger reveal than Overwatch 2, which we will get to in a minute, but I think a bigger reveal than Overwatch 2 was the reveal of the next World of Warcraft expansion.
Hands down.
World of Warcraft Shadowlands... The name not a surprise to a lot of people who, again, were watching the leaks. But I've got to say, that opening cinematic, can we talk about this cinematic for a minute? I keep on getting blown away by the quality of these cinematics. It starts with Sylvanas at the steps of Ice Crown Citadel. And I'm like, oh, man, she's going to go see the Lich King. And just the opening lines and stuff. And she... going to Bolvar, and I'm thinking, they're going to do it. They're giving us Sylvanas the Lich Queen. Mm-hmm. They're doing everyone's fan service dream for this. It's like, it's all come down to this. She's going to take the helmet, put it on, and there's going to be hell to pay. And we get to that point, and Sylvanas and Bolvar the Lich King have it out, and she's showing her stuff, and the Lich King's doing his thing, and it's all rather impressive, rather flashy, rather crazy. She takes out the Lich King, chains him up, says, "You're not worthy of the crown," takes it off. And I'm like, oh man, here we go. Holding the helm in front of her. And then in what I would say is probably the second biggest surprise of BlizzCon 2019 for me, takes the helm and just rips it in half.
Oh yeah, that moment.
And at that moment, I'm like, what? I want to watch YouTube videos of people reacting to that cinematic, that moment, because what a clever move, you know,
to genius. Like
and play it up. And it's like the way she's holding the helm and takes it. How could you not think that she wouldn't put it on?
Oh, yeah. When you watch it a second time or a third or a fourth or I don't know, I've watched it 10 times. You notice that when she pulls it up, you see her hands kind of gripping that inner part, like where the opens up to the face sort of. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it looks like a way that someone would put on a helm. So that's good. But right before it starts to tear, and you actually see her muscles kind of tense up and like start to pull at it. And that's mm-hmm. just such a cool moment. It's just this. And I was sitting there with my buddies, and I believe at that point I was audibly said, did she just, and then like, we just freaked out after that fact, because yeah, the sky tears open. Now you see basically, I mean, in many ways, it's kind of like the Upside Down from Stranger Things, in that there's a tower literally upside down sticking out of the sky. A tower which apparently turns out to have some really, really important things going on the other side there. Torgeth, the Tower of the Damned. But man, dude, like, yeah, I'm with you on that one. When that happened, they caught me. They totally got me. When she brought that helm up, I thought she was going to put it on, but nope.
Yeah, so we are indeed going to the Shadowlands. A lot of interesting things coming out of the information that was revealed out of this. I'm going to ask you first, what's Kevin, from everything we learned about Shadowlands today, what made the biggest impression on you? What was the biggest surprise? What's got you hyped more than anything? And please don't, we already know the baby alpaca.
Dang
is
it.
Is a yeah,
that's exactly what I was going to say.
I know, but besides that.
Okay,
besides
other than that, the alpaca mount, done. No, that's an 8.3 thing. No. It is Torgeth, Tower of the Damned, hands mm-hmm. down. So that is actually something, and the way they set it up was very interesting, because obviously the initial part was just introducing us to it, showing us some of the new zones, and we can get into some of that as well. But really, when it got on to be Ian's time for his panel, the What's Next, they laid out a lot of that stuff at first and didn't really even talk about Torgeth, Tower of the Damned, until the end. Because in my mind, Brian, I think it was what it was building up to. It was the climax of his announcements for sure, because it's a roguelike.
Yeah, and if you've been following World of Warcraft, you know that in 8.3 we're going to have some of this content called Horrific Visions. Mm-hmm. Which involves content where you can go in as one player, or it can scale up to five players if you want. And Torgeth works in a similar way as far as that participation factor goes. So you can solo it. You can bring in one friend, two friends, up to four friends if you so choose. I love that aspect of it. I love that it's not spec dependent. And you can go in there as a tank or a healer or a DPS, however you want. So I find that that's going to kind of likely be my island scenario system, my island expedition system, because I loved island expeditions. I love small group content. I love single player content. So this is right up my alley.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they work it in with the rewards. And speaking just like rewards and progression, a number of things that we heard that got, you know, huge reception from the crowd. No artifact power grinding.
That was honestly probably the second biggest cheer of the crowd I've heard.
Right, right. And they are taking a lot of steps to make this one of the most alt-friendly expansions in some time, Kevin.
They're taking a lot of steps to make this just one of the best expansions of all time. I'm going to call that right now. Like there's, and really throughout the entire panel, if you haven't seen the What's Next, like if you don't have the virtual ticket or any other way to see it, try to get your hand on it somehow, because he really lays out a lot of things, Ian Hazzikostas does, that have been community feedback. gripes that we've had, just our general feeling. And in every case, it seems like the moves they're making are moves to make just our lives easier in the retail game, just to make the experience smoother and more fun. And yeah, as you alluded to, one of those is making the leveling process itself easier. And this was another one that got a huge, huge cheer from the crowd because, and we've known for some time that there was the possibility of a level squish going down to a different number. And it seems that for this next expansion in the Shadowlands, we're going to be grinding from 50 to 60, mm-hmm. which if this is the first you're hearing of that, I will say that, again, of course, everything else up until that point is scaling. Like your 1 to 50 grind is the rest of the content leading up to now. But
it's everything.
Yes.
You can level from 1 to 50 exclusively in one expansion. You don't even have to do any, like, of the original Azeroth zones. You can go 1 to 50 in Mists of Pandaria. Mm-hmm. That blows my freaking mind.
Yeah, have you skipped Mists of Pandaria, like, just in general? And you always thought, oh, I kind of want to see what that story was like. It experienced those zones. I mean, I guess I kind of went by there a little bit on my way to Ice Crown as I was leveling, you know, in the current system. But no, like, if you want to experience Pandaria and use that as your method to grind a character from 1 to 50, you can. And that is an incredible feat right there. And on top of that, too, he promised that with each level should come some sort of an improvement, whether it's I think they'll get into some of the systems and stuff tomorrow on some of this. But whether it's like new abilities or new talents, that kind of thing. And honestly, that to me, too, is a lesson learned from Classic, in that one of the nicest things about Classic in my mind, as I've been leveling up my priest, is that every other level I get to buy new abilities and I got new talents and I'm building up the tree as I go. So, I mean, they're taking lessons learned from it. They're improving upon what they've got so far. And he also said that the leveling process is faster so that you don't have to wait quite so long from starting your fresh new allied race to getting up to the end game content. And that excites me, honestly, because I've played through the leveling experience enough times now that I would like to just experiment with other classes too. So yeah, all about it.
Yeah. And also as far as like in terms of alt friendliness, even though the storyline's going to be a linear experience after you do that on your first character, you'll be able to run alts and the alts will be able to participate in world quest content, end game content and stuff. And you will level up from 50 to 60, but still make progress toward end game goals and all of that. Mm-hmm. I really, again, answering a lot of requests that players have made to make the experience more friendly for running alts. Now, this doesn't really impact me as much because I tend to stick to one character, if not two, but I'm really happy for all the people out there who do have a lot of different classes that they want to play. And you have four different ways to experience endgame too with these four covenants, which means there's a lot of replayability there. Not as much replayability as say Legion with all the class quest stories, but I think this is a good compromise between Legion and BFA.
Yeah, and to speak to the covenant system a little bit more there as well. So one of the nice things about this alt-friendliness that's going on here is that once you've hit max level and gone through the story as it's meant to be experienced in the sequence of zones that you're meant to experience it in on your main, you then are able to, on alts, go back and have an experience like we've had with Legion and BFA, where you can jump around to the different zones, just kind of level in an open world way, and you can choose your covenant out the gate on alts. What do I mean by choose a covenant? Well, so there's the four main zones that is outside of the Maw, of course. And in each of those, Bastion, Maldraxxus, Ardenwald, and Revendreth, we've got a different covenant, which is the ruling class of that area. And some of these just look incredible. We got the Kyrian, Necrolords, Night Fae, and Venthyr, respective to what I said before. And man, okay. The main question mark in my mind, Brian, about all this is that, so this is not only going to drive a lot of the story, going to drive a lot of what's just happening on the other side. I mean, it's also the people that exist there, but it's also the system upon which the game is built. I mean, it's in some ways a replacement of like Azerite Armor and some of these other systems, in that you level up and you get to end up choosing one of these, and then you become sort of lion to them, and then you get things like, you get one class-specific ability that's tied to just that particular covenant, and then you also get a general ability that's open up to everybody. But my question for you, Brian, is did you catch, had they specified whether locking in with, like if I chose Night Fae as my thing, have I then become a Night Fae druid, or do I have a chance to respect that later?
They didn't mention being able to change, as far as I know.
I ask because I kind of hope you can't. Like, I kind of hope that I level up and I've made a Necrolord mage, and if I want to change my mind, I got to raise a Venthyr mage, you know what I mean? So, yeah, but we'll see tomorrow. Tomorrow they're going to get into more of the systems and this kind of talk, so I expect we'll probably get that answer and many more, but it's exciting stuff for me.
Interesting surprises from this panel were things that they did not mention.
Mm-hmm.
No new race, no new class. That was surprising.
That was surprising. So, no new race, though. I mean, with the system,
the race wasn't surprising. The lack of a new class was.
That absolutely was. I was just going to say, I mean, I expect some of these to be allied races. I mean, even some of those owl people in there look like something I could play. But yeah, the lack of a class, which leads me to my weird tinfoil hat question for you for the night, Brian. I mean, we're just venturing into the Shadowlands. We're just learning about what is possible there. Is it possible that this could be the first expansion in which we get a new class mid-expansion, like 9.2? Is there a world where that could happen?
I don't think so.
No? Just because it cuts down on the hype for the game?
I don't see it happening. I mean, if it wouldn't be the first time I was surprised by something if it happened, but I don't think the story that they're telling requires the inclusion of a new class even halfway into it.
Maybe not. I'm still trying to hang on to that dream. That's all there is to it. But yeah, no, and the, I don't think it was a leak, but the rumors that got around for sure quite a bit was of the Tinker. And obviously we haven't seen that here, so. But and then again, I've heard that Tinker has been a rumored class for the last 3 to 4 expansions, so just another one.
And people wanted Tinkers, they wanted Bards. I'm also surprised by another thing that was not mentioned, and that is basically the state of factions. People were thinking that as a result of the aftermath of Battle for Azeroth, that, you know, there'd be some sort of impact as far as factions go, and, you know, what allegiance your characters would have, would there be a third faction, would there a way to be faction neutral? And it turns out, this expansion has nothing at all to do with the faction system whatsoever. Horde is still Horde, Alliance is still Alliance, and that faction icon next to your name is pretty much there. Now, that being said, I think they might use that faction symbol next to your name on the character screen to help remind people what covenant they have as well.
That's a good point. Yeah. To me, the faction icon was one of my big question marks leaving today as well. Is it possible, though, that they touch any of this tomorrow? Because, again, the panel is more on like the systems of the game. To me, any faction crossing would be a systemic thing. So, I mean, it's not impossible. But yeah, that's a good point to have the covenant icon maybe next to your... Because that's true. Yeah, if you had a bunch of alts and you really had to keep track across multiple servers even, like, oh, I really want to play my Horde Venthyr Hunter, so I've got to go to this, you know. So maybe you're onto something. Maybe it's just a way to track things, but... Yeah, I was hoping for something there. I would think too that maybe like story wise we could see stuff like that. One of the prevailing theories was that, you know, perhaps it's not a full merging of the Alliance and Horde, but with a little bit of tenuous peace, some races could go over. I know Taliesin is always talking about the potential for Forsaken to go Alliance and that kind of thing. So I still don't. I don't know. I mean, That kind of thing could progress in stories as we progress into like 9.1 and 9.2 in my mind too. So maybe it's just not something they haven't gotten to yet, but we'll see. Again, still holding out hope. That's just what I do. I'm sorry. And you know what? Hope pays off because we've got Dottie. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Speaking of Forsaken and all that. Another interesting change and a very well-deserved change, quite frankly, is they mentioned amongst some of the changes that are coming is more character customization. Mm-hmm. And while that may not be a big deal to a lot of people who just want to kill things and get loot, I think it is a huge deal, especially to, people of color, of minorities, yeah, who, like to play human characters and would possibly like to play a human character that more resembles themselves, as they mentioned in there. I think that's a huge win. I think having a more diverse looking cast of characters, regardless of what race they belong to, is awesome.
Absolutely. And I think Ian said it best in the presentation. He said that that the way you look in the game is your way to express yourself. It's your avatar within the world. It's like, in some ways, it's the bridge between our world and that world, much like the gaping maw of Ice Crown Citadel is going to be the bridge between those worlds, right? He didn't go that nerdy, but I'm sure he would have. He's that nerd level. Like, give Ian time and he would have gone there. Make no mistake. I'm with you. This is an exciting thing. And the models look cool. I mean, you're right. I mean, they had the different looks of humans, but then they showed examples of Forsaken. There was a really cool dwarves that were shown as well, with all just different color schemes and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I'm on board. More of this. And it seemed to me, too, from what Ian said, that this is something they're always iterating on and always improving. So, I mean, I expect to see stuff like this with almost every set, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. All in all, I would say I am super excited for Shadowlands. And again, there is very little that we know in terms of just the nitty gritty of some of these systems and such. But I'd say the overall presentation, the big picture view that they've given us has me pretty excited. It's definitely not starting out the way I thought it was going to start out. And it's going to be interesting to see how Bolvar's role plays into everything. We are going to get an appearance by Bwonsamdi, at least in a dungeon, should be pretty cool. And I'm hyped to see what direction that they go with this, because I really had doubts about there being an expansion about nothing but the Shadowlands, because I'm like, how can you do an expansion about nothing but the Realm of Death? But as we were shown, there's more to death than just bones and skeletons and stuff. There's different realms, different versions of the Shadowlands. So
I like that they touched on even the fact that it is true. We at least graze the surface of the Shadowlands every time we die in the game, and have since its mm-hmm. beginning. And it is the spirit healers that then choose to send us back, and then we just keep going back and back and back, and eventually just beat the boss we've been working on the whole time. But I liked how they even kind of touched on that fact. And so now they mentioned the system of death itself is broken. And I do have questions about what happens when you die in the Shadowlands.
That's a good point. They did say, I mean, one thing that they did impress is that the endgame region, the Maw, yes, is going to be made to be a very, threatening, dangerous endgame place, and they want it to be scary and stuff like that. And I can think of nothing scarier, Kevin, than an endgame zone where you have 3-minute long walkbacks to your corpse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, it in some ways, and they even harkened back a little bit to, they wanted to bring back that feel that you had from vanilla of, and because you dropped there apparently. I mean, that's where the story starts. And they wanted to bring back that feel of, you remember how way back in the day, and I mean, you could do it now in Classic, when you're in Ashenvale and you walk up that trail trying to check out Fellwood and you're like, oh, that's cool. Mm. And then you just have these level ? Bears come from everywhere for you. Like, I want that feel in the mall when I land there, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to Shadowlands. I think it was a solid presentation, and they've definitely got me sold. Speaking of being sold, you can pre-order the expansion now. And if you are not one who is interested in a character boost, you can pre-order the expansion for simply $39.99. You won't get access to some of the mount and vanity extras and stuff like that. But if you're just looking for an affordable way to play Shadowlands, this is one of the more affordable entry points for an expansion in a few years. So definitely worth checking
out. Yeah, for sure. So what's the one with all the bells and whistles come with? It comes with a level boost?
So the $39.99 is just the expansion. $59.99 is a mount, a set of transmog armor, and a level boost. The one above that, which is $79.99, is everything I just told you, plus a pet, plus 30 days of game time.
Gotcha, which would be $15 roughly.
Right.
Yeah, okay, interesting. And then do you get some of these things now, or do I have to wait till 8.3 or 9.0?
You get all the stuff right away.
All right, well.
Like, if you get the $79.99 version, I believe the 30 days game time gets added from the time you purchase it.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. Okay, well, all right. I did want to boost a character, so maybe. Because that's still cheaper than you would get for just buying your own just raw boost. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Not that I'm trying to chill or, like, sell this stuff. I'm just saying. I'm excited. Count me in.
No. I think it's at least worth pointing out there that there's a $39.99 option, and that there hasn't been an option like that for a while. So indeed. I would definitely look into it if you have any interest in it. All right, let's move on to Overwatch, specifically Overwatch 2. Plenty of leaks out about this thing. A lot of talk that this would have a very heavy PvE element in it. And I think the biggest takeaway from this, Kevin, is the PvE has me intrigued. The new looks look cool. New characters look cool. I'm just wondering, and this may seem like a weird question for me to ask, but how much am I going to have to pay for this?
Yeah.
Because I think I'm going to buy it, but it's weird because this is basically a sequel to Overwatch. They have said that this is a sequel to Overwatch. They have even gone as far to say that the skins that you get in Overwatch 1 will carry over into 2, which is awesome. The stuff that you earned in 1 carries over into 2, and I think that is great. I think that is a great way to, you know, reward and show appreciation to the people that invested in this franchise from the beginning. But at the same time, I'm like, so is this exactly a separate game? Is it really just a glorified expansion? It's weird.
Again, my two buddies
it's not
and I.
Bad. It's just weird.
My two buddies and I were scratching our heads as well, and I think though it's weird, but it's weird in like a community serving way. Because it is true. They could have just come out with a totally new game, had a totally new system for unlocking things, all the old heroes and a crop of new ones, and it's all built on the new system, and hey, you got to start leveling up again, but that's okay, cool. I mean, it's the kind of thing that Activision Blizzard does. The latest, I think it's like Call of Duty 20, just came out this past week, right?
Right.
You had to do just that. So, I mean, the precedent for that kind of thing is there, but I think the difference in some ways between how that franchise and how like Overwatch in general has run is in that, I mean, to me, Overwatch has had a weird business model this entire time. I mean, the loot box is what allows it to run the way it does. But beyond that, like if you're not into loot boxes, sinking your money in and you just get them from leveling up, I mean, you pay for the game. And then since then, you've just gotten all the content, all the new maps, all the new heroes. They've all come out the day they came out. You didn't have to buy like some sort of preview pass of some kind to do all that stuff. You just got them. And so this has that feel to me. It has the feel of being able to carry over everything that you've done so far. And then, you know, from there you get access to those heroes. And in the original base game, which still exists and runs on its own, you still get the new heroes that are coming out with 2 as well. So like, and that to me is interesting. Is the crossover there between engines. I don't know enough about the tech in the back end, but are they going to have to come out with Echo so that she can be playable in both engines and both like versions of the game? I guess it's possible, but...
Yeah, I guess. It's... I think some of the stuff... It's funny because they've tried to explain what this means, but at the same time, it feels a little vague, too. Mm-hmm. I just want more direct answers.
They admitted that they struggled to explain it because, and it's true, you know, between the opening ceremony and when Jeff came back out for the panel on it, the panel, he even mentioned, you know, we brought this up at the beginning, but it doesn't seem like everyone's totally getting what's going on here. I am at least sold on the fact that it's a new game and that they had to really totally revamp the way the engine looks. They've revamped the look of the heroes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they had to build out all the single player stuff that's going on, as well as a new mode and multiplayer and all that. But yeah, I'm sold enough that it's a new game. But you're right. It does almost have more of a feel to me of just an expansion in that sense, because you're carrying so much over. If it was a hard stop and you just had to start afresh, to me, that would feel like a new game. But this, yeah, I don't know. Honestly, go ahead.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, this is how you convince people to pay $59.99 for Overwatch 2, especially people who've bought Overwatch 1 before. In most games like this, you would be starting out with a new game under... it'd be a new part of the same franchise of the game. You're starting all over. You're acquiring these skins and stuff for this game that you didn't get in the last game or that's not going to carry over into the next game. So in terms of content, this may feel like an expansion. But is a person willing to pay the kind of core retail price for a game, like say $60, as opposed to expansions tend to cost $30 to $40, right?
Right.
I would say if you were to ask any person who's played Overwatch for a relatively long period of time that they have accumulated, let's say over the course of their time playing, you know, a couple hundred loot boxes worth of items, I think it's in their best interest to retain that couple hundred loot boxes worth of items in this new game for an extra $20 on top of what they would be paying for what you'd call an expansion to a game, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that I'm not saying that the value is not there. I think that they can get away with selling Overwatch 2 at retail price at $59.99, and I do not think it is a bad value. I do not think it is a ripoff, provided that they, you know, maintain that, yes, stuff carries over.
That said, and this is going to sound weird coming from a guy who did an Overwatch podcast for a year, mm-hmm. I was not sold at first. Like when we went through the first opening ceremony and then also first bits of the panel, I was sitting there going, I mean, yeah, I want to play through the single player stuff. I'm going to wait until 2023 when it goes on sale for $20 and pick it up then and just experience it. I've kind of a little bit fell out of love with the Overwatch universe, broadly speaking. But then, Brian, I saw that it's coming out on the Switch. And weird thing about that, too, is that, like, I'm not interested in the current Overwatch on Switch. It's been out for half a month now. Right. Just because, I mean, it runs at 30 frames per second, and it's not the same experience as what you've got going on. But this on Switch is different. I'd have the ability to dink around in a multiplayer mode if I wanted to. But I could also be laying in my bed just blasting through the campaigns that way. So honestly, until I learned it was on Switch, I wasn't sold, and now I am.
The PvE had me sold, and the carryover of items had me sold. Believe I will be buying this.
Yep.
All right.
Will your items carry over from the Switch versions? I don't know.
It'll carry over from the Switch version to the Switch version of Overwatch 2, sure.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't see why not.
I don't either.
All right, let's move on to, before we circle around back to our franchise of choice with Hearthstone, worth kind of bringing up just really briefly, there were announcements for some of the other franchises going on in the Blizzard Arcade. People are playing Deathwing in Heroes of the Storm at BlizzCon today at the demo tables. And an announcement, if you got the virtual ticket or if you're attending BlizzCon, you get Deathwing. Thank you, Blizzard.
Yeah, that's awesome. And there's that period of time, I forget the exact length, but there's, I'd have to go back and see, where all heroes are free in the game. So people can just jump in and test them
until
out.
Until November 10th or 11th,
that's,
I want to say.
That's what I was randomly thinking of. So yeah, no, that's an exciting time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, it's definitely a good time to dive back in.
Question about the arcade as well. So I like the way that they showcased it, and I would love to be there playing this stuff for sure. Like that would be my kind of filler go-to place if I was there on the floor. I'll tell you that right now. But Jalen Brack also kind of alluded at the beginning that, that yes, there was the arcade and here's what it looks like and what it's going to be. But I got a vague vibe that they were interested in bringing that arcade experience to us at home. Did you get that impression at all? Or was that just me being hopeful again?
No, I didn't get that impression.
Okay. Cause I do want to play me some Diablo 2. I'm going to say that right now, but maybe there's there's a day.
You know, Diablo 2 remaster was a popular rumor and it did not get confirmed.
Right.
So,
think it's likely because GOG never got the green light on it.
Yeah.
So,
well, also that's another thing. I mean, I think we're going to end up talking about, you know, the new Hearthstone set last, but I do want to touch on a couple general things about BlizzCon here, in that there were a lot of things that people were hoping for or predicting that did not happen. People were hoping for new IP announcement. It did not happen. Diablo 2 remaster. It didn't happen. There are those people out there who were interested to see if there were new mobile game reveals. Feel how you will about mobile games. It is a popular market and it makes money. No talk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Hearthstone, which is a mobile game, no talk about mobile games. So very interesting in that for some reason, and I think, you know, the number of coming soon panels, I think gave people a bigger impression that there was going to be a lot more to talk about than just, and it sounds weird to say, just Overwatch, Diablo, a new WoW expansion and a new Hearthstone expansion. I think people were thinking there has to be one other thing, and there wasn't, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think if they had mentioned anything else, if they had attempted to talk about a new IP this year or a new mobile game, I just think the excitement or hype for something like that would have been somewhat tarnished by the fact that they're talking about Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4. There's only so much hype that they can put in that room.
Yeah, that's true. And we had this chat on Hearth Casual actually just last week. And at the time, you'll recall, I was all on board about, oh yeah, I mean, there's going to be something mobile and it's going to be World of Warcraft Go, and maybe I'll start a podcast on it. But yeah, as soon as you said on that episode that, oh, well, no, but they won't do a mobile thing this year. Like, that's when I started to sit back and say, maybe they don't. And here we are. They didn't. So, I mean, to me, though, the most intriguing question in my mind burning right now is what's on that Diablo Immortal demo on the floor. But I'll try to see what I can find out about that soon. But because I am interested, I'm in that camp that you mentioned, just because I have time in my life that can be filled by games like that. I've even been playing Call of Duty mobile, believe that or not. So, you know, but anyway, yeah, it is an interesting move on their part. I think it is the right PR move as well, just because that way we really don't have any ghosts of last year's Diablo Immortal this time. You know, we just go in there. We got Diablo 4 right out the gate. That's mitigating that sort of issue. And then the rest of it is just proving that it's a company that's PC focused, you know? And I'm cool with that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, speaking of mobile, let's talk about the mobile game that they did talk about, and that is Hearthstone. We've already spent some time talking about Battlegrounds, but there was something else that they talked about, and that was the third set, the final set of the Year of the Dragon. And lo and behold, Let There Be Dragons, Kevin.
Yes. Not just dragons, but the most powerful dragon of all time, Galakrond. Which actually I knew. I was proud of myself. I was like, huh, that's a lore thing I'd picked up on, that the bones at the bottom of Worm Rest Temple are those of Galakrond. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there's a lot to unpack here, Brian. I almost feel like there should be an entire show about it where you and I unpack these kinds of things. But I will say for sure.
Well, and I will say that we don't need to dig real deep this, because I do want to save some talk about all the cards that were revealed for this. And by the way, I want to say really quickly here, kudos to the Hearthstone team for revealing over 30 cards at this thing. That's more cards that they revealed for any set of the BlizzCon. That surprised me.
Was that just in the panel alone? Or has there been much more on like the floor and everything?
There were 33 cards revealed between the BlizzCon panel, the demo on the floor, the YouTube video that they put out, and some, I think, one other piece of information. But out of cards, the out of cards site has been tracking everything. And yeah, 33 card reveals. That surprised me.
Yeah, that is surprising. That's so surprising to me. I didn't even know it had happened. Haven't had a chance to dig into all that yet. But yeah, no, that's an interesting move on their part. I'm not against it for sure. I mean, we really only have between now and December 10th to get this thing out the door, which is kind of their normal release schedule. So,
I mean, I think they're going to go dark for a week or two, and then they'll start the 2 week hype of build up for like card reveals for the rest of the set.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, cool stuff though. Absolutely. Galakrond. So basically, the way they've gone about setting this one up is that, and it's true, throughout the entire past year in Hearthstone, we've kind of seen the story of the League of Evil versus the League of Explorers, and how they are just staging up to pit themselves against each other in what really is the climactic finale in this set. So you get to, of course, align yourself with either side, in that obviously you could choose the classes that align with the League of Evil versus the ones that align with the League of Explorers. And in doing so, you get certain entire game mechanics that align with those factions. Now, I mean, we alluded to Galakrond. He's the one that is the main hero card for all the five classes that are evil. And with each one, there's a different one for each class with different approaches to what happens when his ability goes off. The mechanics leading up to it are very interesting. Why am I blanking on the name, the keyword that gets it going?
Invoke.
So Invoke reminds me a lot of, if anyone played back in the day, of course, Old Gods, the Whispers of the Old Gods set. To me, the Invoke, just as a keyword, reminds me of that long-term gameplay of building a C'Thun deck where you had these cultists that would...
Oh, it's totally C'Thun 2.0, because that's why they said that everyone's going to get... Galakrond for free. They have to, considering how many Galakrond build around cards that they have in the set. They did the same thing with C'Thun.
And then
it totally screamed C'Thun 2 to me.
Galakrond's probably not going to be in Arena and any of the supporting cards. Like, yeah, it's going to come off very C'Thun 2.0, but different in that. I mean, it's a different Galakrond per class. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, and I got to say, as a rogue and priest Hearthstone player, oh, am I loving Galakrond Rogue and Galakrond Priest.
Oh, yeah.
The Galakrond Rogue hero power is add a lackey to your hand. By the way, the new lackey for the set is Discover a Dragon.
Okay, that's good. And fitting.
Right? But, oh my gosh. And the rogue battle cry for Galakrond is to draw cards and reduce them to zero.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just... Rogue Galakrond's so good.
It ends with the fourth one is draw four cards and make them all cost zero, right?
It's basically... It costs 7 mana to play Galakrond, so at his full power, it's like you're playing Sprint, except you gain 5 5 armor, and the stuff you draw is free.
Yep, and it's, you get a weapon. Sick.
Oh, and you get a cool hero power that lets you add lackeys to your hand instead equip a weapon.
It brings me to my one concern, is that it is true, and they even kind of alluded to the fact that if you go through the effort to get everything staged up, invoke enough times to get that perfect Galakrond out, I mean, it is pretty much a game ender. Like, you've been given so many tools and so much value for that one play that, I mean, does the opponent just concede? Do you get to then live out that fantasy? Like, I've got some concerns about the power level of when you get the fully invoked versions off. Do you?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, seven mana to play him, and you would have to do four invokes before playing him on seven. I am looking at some of the cards that we've seen. I think if you build your deck right, it's very possible to invoke four times before turn seven.
You got Rogue with all the bounce effects. Just keep sending the same invokers out.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. What scares me, too, is the love that they've seemed to have shown Face Hunter. Have you seen all those?
Mm-hmm.
Many times did they allude to the fact that, oh, this spell does Corrosive Breath. Two mana, deal three damage to a minion, but if you're holding a dragon, it also hits the enemy hero. And then, like, their particular Primordial Explorer. By the way, the Explorers are one of the features of the good guy classes, if you will. These tiny, cute dragons that then come over to help out. And help each of them have a battle cry for Discover a Dragon. But then, yeah, I mean, it's a poisonous 3-mana 2/3 in that case for the, what is, I still think, a very cute Primordial Explorer dragon. I mean, maybe not as cute as Azure Explorer, but who's keeping score? So, yeah, I mean, I'm a little scared of Face Hunter. I think it could be going in that direction. And I remember I'm getting flashbacks to my Naxx days and my, you know, the other meta in which that was a big thing. You know what I mean?
I'm just happy that we have dragons at the end of a dragon. The dragon. It was about time.
Seems fitting. Yeah.
And I'm definitely looking forward to playing Galakrond Rogue. A ton to talk about in the next episode of Hearth Casual that you and I record, Kevin. I don't even know how we're going to fit all the stuff that we have yet to talk about, because the next time that we record Hearth Casual, we will have had Battlegrounds experience, probably seen possibly a few more cards. We haven't even really digested the cards here, but man, what a day one of LizCon, and there's still quite a bit left. I mean, when we're done recording here, I'm going to look at the replay of the costume and talent contest to see who won that stuff. I'm going to check out a couple of panels that I missed, and it's just been so far a pretty solid year for BlizzCon. I have no complaints. They definitely improved over last year.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I'm with you. There's a few things I need to catch up on. And that's the nice thing, too, about, I mean, if you could swing it, having the virtual ticket is that you can go back and catch VODs that you'd missed. I mean, all the little Warcraft things, like the history of audio one I'm really interested in, and so many of those others. Yeah, I'm pretty much living the VOD life from here on out, just because I got a big family thing tomorrow. But yeah, really excited to sink my teeth into everything else they've got. And more than anything, I think still, again, based on the sentence that I started this with, I want to know more about the Shadowlands. I'm really excited for the panels diving deeper into the systems tomorrow on that, for sure. But what are you most excited for tomorrow?
Yeah, definitely a lot more to be found out about both Diablo 4 and World of Warcraft Shadowlands in day two. I encourage you guys, if you have the virtual ticket, to check it out, even if you haven't gotten the virtual ticket yet. Now that you know a couple of things that, like, hey, getting the virtual ticket gets you faster access to the whole Hearthstone Battlegrounds, it gets you Deathwing, it gets you into the Warcraft 3 Reforged beta if you get the virtual ticket right away. So there's more perks to getting the virtual ticket. If you haven't gotten it yet, you may want to consider doing it. No, I'm not getting paid by Blizzard to say that.
Question though, and this might be embarrassing. What do you get for the Hearthstone card? Do we know yet?
I'm as far as the Golden Legendary or whatever. I don't know. It's a good question.
Maybe we'll learn tomorrow. Or maybe it's going to be a hype thing that happens between now and then, but
and possibly, or I may have just missed it, or it might be Galakrond. If we get every Galakrond as a Golden Legendary, that's great.
I believe they had said, oh yeah, maybe that's it, because they said that they were going to give Galakrond all forms to everybody, which makes sense. So maybe you're right.
Right.
Maybe
so the virtual ticket golden. People probably get the golden versions.
Yeah, that checks out. That's probably it. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, Kevin, it has been fun talking about day one with you. We're going to have plenty of talk about, of course, on our own show, Hearth Casual, with Battlegrounds and all that stuff. But until then, where and how can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Multizord is the main place. And I'm back. I hopped off there for a while because I didn't want to see all the leaks and stuff. And I'm still a little upset that leaks were as big a thing. I by the way, on the subject of leaks, I am glad that we saw Ian Hazzikostas and Jeff Kaplan both just outright bring those up. Like when the cinematic was over and then Ian came back and said, now do you see why his eyes are blue? Like, I don't know. I was cracking up in my seat. Anyway, my point is...
The shade was well-deserved.
It absolutely was. It absolutely was. So yes, Twitter's the place and I am not shying away from it now.
All right, well, folks, you can find me on Twitter at Brian Podcaster. Yes, that is a new Twitter handle. I changed it recently. You find me at Brian Podcaster. I do a couple of our shows, Realm Maintenance, which is what this show is. It's funny because I just said that as if this were an episode of Hearth Casual, but the other two shows I do are Hearth Casual with Kevin here and the Rolling Restart, which is a WoW-focused podcast. Of course, the normal episode of Realm Maintenance will be coming out on Tuesday, but between this and Tuesday, there is going to be one more piece of bonus content, something that I'm calling After the Storm, because why not? And that is going to be a collection of short interviews with myself and several friends of the show, content creators, just kind of getting their hot takes, their brief reactions on what they like best about BlizzCon, what they're most excited about, any other comments or views or opinions that they might have, hoping to talk to people like Ben Bumhofer, Sparty Smallwood. I'm going to be talking to Medicakes from the Epic Podcast of yore and a good friend of mine. So a few different interesting voices to be had on there, and then some. I hope you check that out. That should be out ideally late Sunday, early Monday. So do check that stuff out. It has been a pleasure covering BlizzCon 2019 from this way. Even though I'm doing it from home this year, I have to say, Kevin, I have no problem with being part of the No Pants Club this year.
Yeah, it's a good club. Big fan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me, by the way. I really appreciate it.
Well, folks, that is going to do it for us for now. Once again, thank you for downloading and checking us out. And until next time, I've been Ro. He's been Kevin. We will talk to you on Sunday or Monday. Enjoy the rest of BlizzCon weekend, guys. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.